Hello again, and welcome to Nkwazi Unfiltered. My name is Amina Kaunda, and my guest today is someone I can describe as versatile. Much of his professional career and success started very young. He was just 32 when he became special assistant to the president for press and public relations under the Rupiah Banda regime. He is a lawyer, an author, a journalist, as well as a political analyst. Welcome, Dickson Jere. I could go on and on and on about your bio because it is quite extensive, but I figure during the conversation is when we'll get to know more about you.
Yeah.
So first things first, thank you for taking the time to come today.
It's my pleasure to make my medium appearance on this show.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, very colorful bio, very colorful history, but I want to start with the early stages as we get to know more about you. So tell us about you growing up. What was it like for a 10-year-old Dickson Jere as you went through life?
Yeah, so I'm born and bred in Lusaka, in particular Matero, the area I'm so fondly attached to. I started my nursery school at the Matero Community Hall. We used to call it welfare or all affair.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where I started. I went to do my primary school at Matero Boys Primary School. So it was a boys school. From there, I went to Monali Boys School. So from my preschool days up to secondary, I was only in the boys school. Yeah, so I did everything in Matero. So you'll be interested to know. I was very sporty, and so I was a karateka. I was a judoka, which I still is. I played football actively. I did boxing.
Wow.
And yeah, athletics. So
yeah.
I was quite known also in the sports area. That's my simple upbringing in Matero, a city within a city, we call it.
Oh, wow. How many siblings?
We were six, one passed on, now we're five.
I always find it interesting because they were so back in those days. It was almost as if parents were just having children.
Yeah, my
family had, I think there were 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Between my dad and his siblings, there were 10.
Yeah, but it was so interesting, 10, but they were able to look after each one of us. And sometimes living in a two-bedroom house, but everybody fitting in. And that's something which has actually disappeared. We used to have cousins, distance cousins, everybody's school holidays, everybody was sleeping in the kitchen.
Yes.
Now that is missing.
Like, yeah.
I used to love that kind of life in Matero.
Yeah. Were you close with your siblings or are you close with your siblings?
Well, relatively close, not very close.
Yeah. And were your parents strict growing up? Because you're actually an overachiever.
I'm coming from strict
households.
I laugh when I see my kids running up to me or arguing with me. And, you know, as when we're growing up in Matero, when you see your father is coming, you run for dear life to go home to make sure you've bathed or you are hiding in the bedroom reading and so on.
And done what you needed to
do. So, that's why we used to nickname our parents. I think if I remember very well, my father was nicknamed Saddam Hussein. But now these kids, they play with us like, we're playing.
Like your friends. What was it like for you as a student? Were you naughty or disruptive in class? Were you the good student?
Well, I mean, I don't know whether I can describe myself as a good student, but I know from grade 1 to 7, I used to come out number 2.
Okay.
Yeah, consistent number 2. And it was interesting. My mother never used to be happy because she wanted me to be number 1. And there was one guy, Joe, Joe Piri, he would beat me throughout. So
if Joe Piri is watching, I hope he knows that.
Well, that's something which is interesting, is that he used to beat me from grade 1 to grade 12. Then he failed the grade 7 exams. Because we used to do those, I don't know whether they still do the multiple choice.
Yes.
Yeah, and you mess up one or two, you are gone. The period of that school, I mean, I have a very short span in terms of sitting in class and listening to the lecture, whatever.
I think you're like me.
I like to engage.
Action, yes.
Yeah, so I'm disruptive in the sense that I'll be disturbing the lecturer with questions or the teacher with questions so that I get engaged. Than sitting for 1 hour just listening to the lecture, I get bored.
Yeah.
So that explains all the teachers who remember me that, he used to engage a lot.
Yeah.
So that's
I was one of those students. It was a training course that my mother had taken me for because I was just not paying attention in school. And the teacher had explained, she says, there's nothing wrong with her. she needs colors, she needs engagement, she needs to talk. And then there's other students who are auditory listeners. So that's interesting that you are more of an engaging person. Because even when I have watched you in interviews, you like to engage with the people.
Yeah, so Basically, that's how my formative year used to be. Yeah. But also, I love reading.
Okay.
I love
reading. What's your book of the moment right now? What are you reading right now?
I'm reading, I don't know whether you are a... Oh, no, I can see even that side. This is Danny Brown. I'm reading Da Vinci Code again.
Okay.
Yeah, just okay. Trying to play out some certain parts which I missed out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't read a lot of fiction.
Neither do I.
But the only exception I have is Dan Brown.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit Gresham because of the legal stuff.
Yes,
but I avoid
okay,
because it's so fiction. I love reading, you know, real life stories. Mm-hmm. So biographies and biographies are my favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's the same with me. And funny that you mentioned John Grisham. I grew up in the house with his novels in the house.
So
very familiar. Yeah.
But in our time, we had, hey, what's that favorite? First Mills and Boone?
Yes, our mothers used to read those.
We used to read that.
Yeah.
And chess.
Yes.
Yeah, so you'd actually exchange a book of chess. Maybe it's starting on page 20 because the first pages are missing.
Yes.
So we used to enjoy reading in our time.
Avid readers. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So did that spurn your interest in journalism? Did it come from there? Where did this fascination come from?
My father loved listening to BBC.
Okay.
On those two band radio, shortwave.
Mm-hmm.
And so every 19 hours, that time I think it used to be 18 hours, there'll be ZBS, then now the NBC News. All of you had to be attentive, sit in the sitting room to listen to the news with him.
I see, okay.
I got to, you know all the big names, get interested in politics because that time it'd be Kaunda from the beginning of the news to the end. So you got interested into current affairs. So that's how I got the interest, but I think I became more involved when I was at Munali.
Okay.
So I joined the what is called Writers Association of Munali, WAM, and we used to write articles where you place them on the notice board, and during break, everybody would go and read. So I started writing a lot of controversial stories, and I became well known at Munali for that. Eventually, I even became an editor. And editor-in-chief of that publication called Munali News.
Yeah.
At that time, the Post newspaper, Weekly Post then, had just been born.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a social corporate responsibility to produce a laboratory newspaper.
Yeah.
So we started publishing a newspaper called Munali News with Mike Ho then at Weekly Post at Munali. And I was part of the team which started doing that.
Okay. Mm. So when you now decided, okay, I'm going to go and pursue this further, I'm going to go to Evelyn Hon and I'm going to pursue a journalism degree, was that something that you had decided already at that point? Because it still sounds
like you were experimenting more than anything. I think I wanted to do law.
Okay.
And my second choice was I'll do mass comm.
Yeah.
So to get into the law school and then just University of Zambia, they had very stiff point system.
Mm-hmm.
And so the points I got was only enabling me to get into CBU or UNSA School of Education.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, to be a teacher, that was not part of my.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I was advised that if you want to practice as a journalist, the good journalists actually were being produced at Evelyn Hon.
I see.
Mass communication were more corporate guys. When they leave, they go and join, you know, either ZNBC or to get into corporate affairs and so on. So I wanted to do the real stuff. And that's how I went to Evelyn Hon College. So I did my 3 years diploma, which eventually was, I think, 4 years because there was closures and whatever. While I was there, I think in my first year, second semester or term, I was already writing for the Post newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when I was at school,
mm-hmm.
I was hitting headlines
as
a journalist in the Post.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was a bi-weekly, Tuesday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how my journalism career developed.
I want to pick on the stories that you were doing, because you mentioned that even at Munali, you were already writing controversial stories.
Yes.
Where does this penchant for picking the most controversial stories come from? Why is it that you choose to be walking that fine line of
I think controversial creating as far as me. I don't know.
It seems to.
I mean, sometimes I just
check
on the Facebook, I'm appearing.
And you're trending in something.
Yeah,
I think the last time it was your judo outfit that we saw.
Yeah.
We'll touch on that.
So I tend to attract controversy. I don't know how, but when I was working in Status, there was a saying among our team that where there's a controversy, my name will always appear. Even if I was not there, they'll say he must have been the one who caused that problem and whatever. So yeah, trouble.
And it's interesting because here's how I would say that your name and everything that you have put together for your legacy, it's indelible in Zambian history, especially because we grew up in South Africa. And I would come into Zambia every holiday. And at the time, I think the post was still running during that time frame. But I remember conversations in the car. And they'd be like, this is a Dixon Jerry article. This one is Dixon. So I just, I remember hearing your name, not necessarily that I even knew the extensive portfolio you hold even today. So now I want to dig deeper because this is something that I'm very interested in because I'm somebody who enjoys pushing the status quo. So is it that you find that there's voices that need to be elevated when you pick on certain journalistic stories? Is it because there are certain things that maybe you feel like need to be brought to light? Or is it just an interest and fascination with ruffling people's feathers?
No, no. I like the unheard to be heard or the unconventional to be, you know, put out there. So when I go and interview that time as a journalist, I was looking for sound bites which are not ordinary. And that's why, because then it used to be a big thing to be a journalist who has a headline, you know, a lead story. So I could go and interview, you and me could go and interview one person, but I'll come up with a very different story from you because I was looking at certain angles. So in other words, when I go and interview my source, I would know exactly what I want to extract from that source. So I'll push you to the corner so that I get what I want. And so, yes, I had mastered that art. And I think that has also followed me. That I know sometimes where to hit just to get the nerves, you know, a bit
nerves going. Is there anything in your childhood that you think prepared you for that? Because it's not an easy position to be in when you, I will, as you put it, attract controversy. It's very easy for somebody to just want to back down and go into hiding.
Well, I mean, I played, I was a boxer. Boxing teaches you a lot of things. But one of those things is that when you are in the ring, you don't actually hear the people shouting, your supporters cheering you. Your concentration is on your opponent. Every single second is on your opponent. You lose a little concentration, you are hit, you are gone. And so, yeah, that has allowed me to do things and switch off.
Yeah.
I mean, I read. Sometimes I'm training and I'll be sitting with you having a drink like they're not talking about me.
Yeah.
Because I learned that from boxing.
Yeah. Do any of your siblings have these same character traits?
No. I think they break that. I don't.
You've just got a thick skin.
Yeah. So, and then I developed it with time. But it's boxing. I tell you, boxing is something which teaches you discipline, endurance, because every second you can be hit, you are gone. You can hit and the other person is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by the way, I was in an academy of boxing in Matero, which was established by one of the most renowned Zambian boxers called Chisanda Muti.
Okay.
I don't know whether you could know Chisanda Muti. Zambia only produced two ever non-boxers, Loti Mwale
and Loti Mwale, I remember.
Chisanda Muti is the only boxer in Zambia who actually fought with Holyfield in the US. So, he was a hero in Matero. So he established a gym for us to make us learn and just, you know, try to get into his footsteps. So I was full time in the boxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, then parents didn't allow us to do sports.
It's as either a career,
school or sports. School sports. So that's how I left boxing.
So when it comes to, I want to delve into your career now with the Post newspaper. You were a full-fledged journalist by this time working with the Post after you graduated, correct?
So there's a gap there which I need to explain. When I was in the second year, I was already writing for the Post as a correspondent, but as a student. Then, because I then was allowed, probably the only one who was not, you know, a full-time staffer to be part and parcel of the newsroom, I became now integrated in the newsroom. So that's why you see almost all my close friends were Post newspaper reporters who were working there.
Yeah.
Then eventually even staying together and so on.
Yeah.
By the time I was graduating, even most people didn't even know that I was in school. Mm-hmm. I remember Fred Membe as our editor then, mm-hmm. Trying to say, but why are you even going to school? Because you are doing exactly what every journalist who has gone through your training do. So mm-hmm. just leave school and concentrate on work. Yeah. Yeah. So eventually, yeah, I started working there. We got established. Yeah. And one of my best days in my life were the Post newspaper days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, we had a good time.
I can imagine, because I don't feel like there was ever a boring moment in the newsroom during that time frame.
We lived as a family, and we're young guys, yeah. single, almost everybody. And so you live in one house.
Yes.
evening, you go to Shentemba mm-hmm. almost every day. Mm-hmm. Those days we used to have, I don't know whether the journalists still have them, the press pass, oh. which Zanisi used to give out that time, ZNS,
yes.
ZS, whatever. That pass could, you know, take you anywhere. And at mm-hmm. Shentemba, when you come with the press card, you'll be allowed in without paying. Then yeah. you get there, then you find all these big names, the ministers, they used yeah. to go to Shentemba. The one first in Kamwala, then it went to Thorn Park. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best
Did
times.
Did you ever have interviews going on?
No, no. Shentemba. So when you are there, most of the time, they'll try to...
It was off the record.
Yeah, they'll try to buy you off, making sure... but the most interesting thing, because none of us used to drive. Mm-hmm. And so you had to dance all the night and wait in the morning when buses start. So when you hear the conductors are shouting, you know, Chaisa Emazdeo, Chaisa Emazdeo.
That's when it's time.
That's when so you jump on a bus and go to, you change and yeah. go back to the office.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the best times.
So tell me more about working at the Post. Obviously, now you've built the camaraderie with everybody in the newsroom in particular.
Yes.
But then it was also very contentious. This is also where you now have become a big advocate for press freedom.
Yeah.
But you were going through a lot while working for the Post during the Chiluba regime. So tell me a little bit about that. Some of the experiences that you had.
For us, it was a daily thing. To be arrested was normal. to be beaten was normal. Mm-hmm. To be stopped from entering a public place was normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've had a good share of seeing police cells because of, you know, my work. And I've had good time also.
While you were in the Post. Police.
Yes,
yeah.
No. We enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah. Did it become like a joke when you would get released and you come back to the office and everybody's looking at you like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I would laugh. Yeah. We'd go and we used to have, because the newspaper initially was weekly Post only on mm-hmm. Friday. That time I was not there.
Yeah.
When I joined, it was bi-weekly. So it was Tuesday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday, when the publication is out, we used mm-hmm. to have what we call a Friday bar.
Okay.
Where the company would buy free alcohol, bribe, yeah. and whatever, and would invite all these big politicians
yeah.
to come and have a drink with us. We used to have a good time. You
okay.
know, yeah. So it was a big, but small
mm-hmm.
united team.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't tell who was the boss, who didn't.
Yeah.
We all worked together.
Yeah.
And that's how I became, you know, a good friend with Joe Kaunda, yeah. and we all met at the Post, Emmanuel Katongo, Sheikh yeah. Chifue. We are a family now. Mm. We've all gone in different directions, but we're a family.
Mm.
So that was very good. We were at Kanjombi House there. There were no cell phones then. They came a bit late.
Yeah.
So you are walking there, you find there's a guard warning you not to go upstairs because the police have surrounded the
yeah.
newsroom or the... searching. So
on the raiding, yeah.
The searches and the raids were normal. Yeah, so we went through all that.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember probably it's the only time the president banned a publication.
Mm.
Yeah, Post 609, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It was banned by the president because there was a story which they didn't want to go out.
So was that, it was good times.
Yeah, good times.
Sounds like it.
Mm.
So was that the catalyst for why you became such a big advocate for press?
Yes, so while we were there, the mm-hmm. Post was the major financier of... Zambia Independent Media Association, mm-hmm. called ZIMA then,
mm-hmm.
Which is the predecessor of MISA.
Yeah.
So without that, we couldn't have survived.
Mm-hmm.
And that MISA had two components, which was very important. One was the Media Defense Fund,
mm-hmm.
where a pool of lawyers were put there on a 24-hour call so that they can help journalists in distress.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. So President Edgar Lungu
yeah.
was one among of those who were on that panel of lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had another one, a fund called Threatened Media Fund.
Okay.
This is the one which would be used by donors to pump in money to help publications that are about to be closed down by government using either tax and other, you know, statutory requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So we had those two. So that's what actually made the Post and several other newspapers and radio stations to survive
there. I see.
Because now there was a backup on financing. Yeah. At some point, even I would go 3-4 months without salaries, but we enjoyed our work.
Yeah, and there was a passion for it.
Yeah, but it was also good. We're just youngsters enjoying ourselves.
Yeah. It
was also good just to go to cocktail parties.
No, it was fun. And
to interact with ministers in our teens. So that was very good. So that period is what actually eventually developed me to understand so many things, to understand governance, to understand how government operate, to understand how politicians behave. My best interviews was always with President Sata, but then he was the Secretary General of MMD.
I see.
Yeah. So when you corner him with a big story about him, he'll make sure I find a more bigger story for you so that you drop the story about him.
I see. Yeah,
so it's always good, good barter system.
Yeah.
You tell, you know, leave that story, but I'll give you a more juicy one.
I'll give you something else.
His office used to be at Kwacha House there.
Mm-hmm.
You open the drawer and give you a confidential letter or cab memo.
Oh, is it?
And give you, no, go on right now. Drop that story. Yeah,
it's funny you say that. I think maybe it's a trend that's continued over the years. So when I was working with another broadcaster, and I wasn't there for too long, I was there for about 2 years, sat in the newsroom as well. I was on the news desk. And sometimes when you do call these ministers, they'll ignore you for a second and then they'll just be like, oh, okay, but here's something else. You go with this story. Leave this one alone.
Exactly.
So I've noticed that trend stays. But interesting. So when the Post, when you leave the Post now, or when it's...
Yeah, so I was the Post. Then... We had a fallout with my bosses. I think on two levels. One, me and I think with Joe Kaunda, we started agitating for formation of a trade union. And the bosses didn't like that. Then the Post used to be dominant at the MISA AGMs.
Okay.
So there would be probably 90%
Post.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so they would pay for everybody at the Post, a cleaner, a gardener, to be part of the AGM. And so they carried votes.
Yeah.
I started advocating that this is a professional board. We didn't need to have support staff to have voting rights and so on.
Yeah.
And that didn't work well.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Post used to have a list of candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the ones you're going to vote for.
And so that was set by the bosses.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Then they put one person that didn't think he was suitable for.
Okay.
Yeah. So I then decampaigned that person and that person lost.
Ever since then, it was feathers ruffled.
Yeah, but if your people were given instruction to vote for this particular person and they didn't vote for him, but you decampaigned. I said, so that's how we parted company.
Mm-hmm.
Then I left.
Mm-hmm.
And I then contested for the MISA president.
Mm-hmm.
Then I won.
See. Yeah.
I think I was 25 then.
See, this is why I said a lot of your professional career has been very young.
So then I got into freelancing.
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of BBC Focus on Africa. I did BBC Network Africa. I did Radio France International. I did AFP, which is Agence France-Presse. Then they took me on now on a full time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got now into international media coverage. So I then traveled now widely, worked briefly at the bureau in South Africa. I'd go and assist the bureau in Zimbabwe, especially during the farm invasion and that period of political violence. I would be in and out of Harare because President Mugabe had put restriction on foreign journalists to enter Zimbabwe, especially coming from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get the press cards. But from SADC and especially Zambia, it was in and out. So I became a relief.
Yeah.
When the Zimbabwean guys, they are tired, I would then go in maybe for a month to run their office while they're on leave, taking their days, then I come back and so on. Then they developed me that I moved also to do a lot of reliefs in the Nairobi Bureau, especially when the Somalian war was quite at its peak. Yeah, so would sit actually, would sleep actually in the offices in Nairobi to cover that story.
Yeah.
So I'd be there in and out, maybe 3 months back, 3 months back. Yeah, same with Dakar, Senegal. Then I went now to also have a stint at the head office in Paris. That was the, you know, climax of my career, because when I was studying journalism, we used to learn about these wire services, how they operate. Oh, there are these three or four in the world, the biggest, and finding myself sitting on the English desk and editing stories from all over the world. I said, oh, okay, so this is what I used to learn, and I'm here now detecting. And so what is interesting is that you put out your wire, we used to call them agent, bulletin, and whatever, then you see it, boom, it hits the CNN.
Yeah.
You even say, that's my bulletin, you know, so
yeah.
you could see that was my...
Yeah.
Highest moments in my career to see that I could actually influence in terms of coverage, international press.
Did you ever get to a point where you reach, as you mentioned, the peak of your career? Did you ever think that this is it, or did you always have an understanding that I need to be dynamic and I need to be I need to move on?
Well, I get bored so easily, so I started getting bored. Yeah.
So after you've done a few things, you felt that nice little adrenaline rush. It's over.
Maybe to do something then.
Yeah.
At that time, then, so while I was Mr. President, then President Manawasa had just been elected. Then he appointed me among other Zambians, I think we were about 38, if I'm not mistaken, to be commissioners to draft the new constitution for Zambia.
I see.
So then I got onto the commission. It's a work which took us about 3 years.
Very and how old were you then?
About 25,
And I keep asking this question.
So, because I'd just been elected as Mr. President. So it took about 3 years.
Yeah.
And it was a fantastic assignment because it was well-paying, I must say. And it's because of it being well-paying, I even built my first house from...
Nice.
Yeah, so from that payment. So we were together for 3 years.
Okay.
So that's how I met and became... No, I had met them before, like...
Yeah.
The speaker, Neri Muti, had met her before as a lawyer because she was one among those who used to assist journalists who were in trouble. But then now we became commissioners together. I met so many prominent Zambians there and I developed a personal and long-term friendship. The special assistant to the president now, Levi Ngoma, was one of... the young guys on the team.
Yeah.
The minister of, immediate past minister of Lwapula, Musonda, was a student leader coming out of CBU and on the commission. So that was a team.
Yeah.
We worked together for 3 years and we became like a family. But the group had the majority lawyers. And so it was interesting to see how, you know, they would argue and I would take them on.
Yeah.
And Professor Mvunga was also part of the team, and he kept on telling me, you need to go to law school.
I was about to ask you,
you need to go to law school.
Where did this inspiration come from?
You need to go to law school. And because I had that interest before as my childhood career, so I then, during that period, enrolled at UNSA. Yeah, so while I was doing that, I was at UNSA. I coincidentally, when I was finishing my degree, I was getting appointed to go to State House as a spokesperson. So my intake then proceeded to ZRA. I didn't because now I was working in State House.
I see.
So 3 years after I came out of State House, I went to ZRA.
Yeah.
And that's when I did my bar exam. So my classmates are all senior to me because I took that break to... No, of course, I still have my juniors, those who failed. So that's how I did it. Professor Mvunga had a lot of influence in the decision of me going back to UNSA because he was... assistant dean there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And also he was a lecturer.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about this journey now through law school and getting to, eventually get to the bar.
Yes.
But then there's, I want to address this gap. So you're at law school, but you're also now special assistant to the president. By this time.
No. So when I was going to State House, I was probably just finished.
You just finished. Oh, so you'd already just finished with
everything. Just finished with law school.
Okay.
Yeah, just finished law school because I remember... when I was appointed, I should have had maybe one or two classes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was very interesting to see everybody coming to see.
Yes.
Yeah,
And everybody, so what was that like?
Yeah.
I mean, you've talked about how you knew the president at the time. You'd already built a relationship with him. But for you personally, when he comes to you and he says, no, 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 I am the letter of appointment. This is what's happening. I need you with me in State House. What was that like for you?
Your no, no, because I'd worked with him during the campaign. For RRB, I was like part of his campaign team. But I did not expect that I was going to be appointed to any position. I was running now my own publication, Executive Issues. I was okay, away from the politics. So he then said, but you we have been part and parcel of this process. Why would you then want to stay away? So I need you to be part of my team. Yeah, and that's how I got into State House.
I see.
Yeah, another, you know, different experience from where I was coming from. Yeah, so the only letter and the only letter I have that President Rupia Banda wrote to me is one. I only have one letter. And that letter, it was him writing to me, congratulating me for having graduated as a lawyer.
And that was it?
Yeah, because most of the things were not done. So the only letter, and I flamed it, because that's the only letter, which under his hand.
Oh, nice. Nice. So when you are now working in this space, you've already written a book that details your experience. Was there any pushback towards that? When you were putting it together and when you now went to the publisher and you
said, I just dumped it.
You just went forward.
Because people were saying, no, this one, what, nobody has ever done it. I said, you know, I'll be the first one to do it.
No, but I mean, that's again.
And I did it.
It speaks to the controversy that you attract.
I did it. So sometimes you have to do things,
fair.
To open up, right? I did it and everybody's now doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, everybody's writing.
Yeah. When I'm practicing as a lawyer, you can't be writing articles about these. I started. Now I'm seeing, I don't know how many people, everybody is writing. Somebody must start something.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So when we look at, after you leave State House and you are now trying to venture into other things, and now you're a lawyer, a qualified lawyer at this point. You do have your law firm now. What has that journey been like? Because it can be equated to entrepreneurship in a sense.
Remember, my story begins with Professor Mvunga.
Yes.
Encouraging me to go to law school.
Yeah.
4 years later, I'm done with the law school. I'm in State House. Professor Mvunga happens to be the best friend of the president now.
I see.
Okay. Well, they've always been best friends.
Yes, yeah.
So now they have a common denominator. This young man is connected to both. Those are two of my mentors I will always cherish in my life.
Yeah.
Professor Mvunga, I leave State House. He calls me. There's a desk for you and a file to start working on at my firm.
Okay.
Yeah. So I left State House straight into a law firm.
I see.
Yeah. I went into the law firm. I then enrolled at ZLA. So I articled at Mvunga Associates with Professor Mvunga as my principal. To some extent, I even say my law firm is an offshoot of Mvunga Associates.
I see.
So it was born out of Mvunga Associates. Yeah. Because I've never worked anywhere as a lawyer apart from the law firm where I did my pupillage and I started my own law firm after I had clocked my 5 years requirement to open my own law firm. So by and large, my influence on the law, my arguments are all influenced by one jurist who's Professor Mvunga.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I started down. It is not what people think.
No, it's not.
Law is an entrepreneurship journey, which is difficult to understand.
Yes.
You can actually run a law firm and learn it on a loss without you realizing. Because you do a lot of things. You're supposed to be bidding for each and every hour. You're supposed to be bidding for every time you are consulted on. But how many Zambians can afford?
That's very true.
Yeah, so here's an old lady who has worked at your office. You looked at her. Can you tell her you need $150 per hour consultation?
Yeah.
Or you can listen to her story and say, okay, mama, there's legal aid. It can assist you. Or I'll refer you to the Lazy Legal Clinic. Yeah, you make decisions. But you've spent maybe 2 hours with her. You can't charge. I don't know whether my colleagues do that. The law firm I was at, Mvunga Associate, it was more like, I used to call it a charity.
Yeah.
Because Professor Mvunga, you go there, you find he has 100 workers from the CCM who have been fired.
I was about to say, it's hard to not have a heart when you are a lawyer.
No,
it's
hard. Well, there are people who have hard hearted.
Yeah.
We just tell you, no, I can't see you unless you pay. And so we branded well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I would remind him that, Prof, we are running a business. We won't pay salaries if We're just doing free cases and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how the law firms operate. One day, you mm-hmm. can have a jackpot.
Mm-hmm.
You hit a big case, big money.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can go 6-7 months without any income.
Yeah.
So it is that, how do you keep that jackpot to keep you in dry days?
Yeah.
And you must be disciplined. Also is that you can have 30, 40 million in an account. That is not your money, which is client's money.
Mm-hmm.
You must have the discipline of not touch that money,
mm-hmm.
even if you are blocked, because it's not your money.
Yeah.
So that's how most lawyers end up in trouble, because then they dip into the client's money, hoping that when I do another deal, I'll pay back. Mm-hmm. And you find there's no big deal coming. You start dipping.
And at
the end of the day, in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I say it should client's money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balance. It requires a cautious decision to say, I am not going to watch Chris Brown.
I'm going to sit here.
Because broke.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, your account is showing there's money which can afford you to go and watch Chris Brown in South Africa. So you must make conscious decision
mm-hmm.
that I'm honest, this is not my money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it will get me in trouble. And so that's how I run the firm. Mm-hmm. And also, others go for bigger firms.
Yeah.
Others go for medium. Mm-hmm. Others go for size. But I call my firm is a boutique.
Mm-hmm.
Not big, not small.
Yeah.
And very selective in the cases we take.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to overburden ourselves with so many cases and fail to represent mm-hmm. a client. And also, you don't want to take on cases which you have no expertise in.
Fair.
So you keep it within your circles. Within your
scope, yeah.
And also making sure
mm-hmm.
that when a client comes, you give mm-hmm. them the ultimate, services which they are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
That way, then you remain in the market.
Yeah.
But also just know your niche.
That's true. Yeah, just know your niche. I do know the
conversations. I tell you, if you see me at the subcourt representing a criminal, whatever, you must ask me twice.
Mm.
What are you doing here? I realize criminal law, especially in the sub courts.
Yes.
No, it's not my thing. Trial by ambush, you know, my thing.
Mm.
If you see me there, there must be a big case, and also involving a client whom I'm representing other businesses.
Yes.
So I stay away from the sub courts.
I see.
Yeah, because of the nature of the practice I do.
I'm going to call you Mr. Jerry. I can't call you Dixon because you are my senior.
They call me DJ.
DJ. Okay, we'll stick with DJ. Mm. I have to ask, between all of this that we've discussed, and it's something that I haven't heard you mention it because I've done my research.
Mm.
When did you meet your wife?
Well, would I remember the year?
Even if you don't remember the year, you can tell us the story. I love stories. I love to hear the origin. Well,
I got married,
stories.
I think, at 24.
At 24. So you were still at the post by this time frame, I think?
Wait a minute. At 25.
25. So yes. 25, you said you were working for BBC.
Yes. I just left at the post because uh-huh. my chief best man was Joe Kounder.
I see.
At the post newspaper.
Yeah.
And so... It was at that point.
Yeah. Where did you meet her?
At the party.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. One of those post parties, I think. Yes.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I remember it didn't take long. Then we had our wedding at Marco Polo.
Yeah.
In Showgrounds.
Yeah.
Now, what's it called now? De Capo.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a lovely cocktail.
Uh-huh. Did you invite ministers? Did you bring ministers?
Yeah, quite a number.
Yeah.
So the issue was there was the normal reception for everybody, old people.
Yeah, I see. Yes.
Then we said, young guys, let's have a cocktail.
The party's aside.
Until the last person leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm told the last person was my brother who left at 08 or something the following morning. So yeah.
That's very interesting. What does she do?
Well, that's business.
So now you have 4 kids later.
Yeah.
Family man. You've built your career, your resume.
Yeah.
You've got your law firm going.
Mm.
I wanted to find out from your standpoint and the way you look at the world now and the way you see it and everything that you've experienced. What do you feel like Zambia is like for the future? This is including your children. I don't know their ages, but I'm assuming that you've got children who are going through all of these processes in Zambia, living life in Zambia, based in Zambia.
My firstborn, my secondborn, they're out of Zambia.
Mm.
In the universities,
mm-hmm.
a bit different the way they learn their lives,
yeah,
the way they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, my second born son had wanted him to do law.
Mm-hmm.
He's opted to do sports science.
Okay.
I'm into sports.
Yeah.
But what the hell is this sports?
What is sports science?
Yeah, and where are you gonna work anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was passionate about. Yeah. So we went searching around the world to find universities which can provide that.
Yeah.
So we found one in Malaysia.
Okay.
He's actually finishing next month.
Oh, nice.
Getting his degree. Mm-hmm. So when I read what he writes now, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is he also a passionate writer like yourself?
He writes maybe better than me.
Yeah.
When he analyzes, like, we'll be going to AFCON in the next 2 months, and he just does a paper on what needs to be done to take this team, then you say, that is why we are behind. You need a nutritionist, this. Have you done this test on the players? Have you done the dietary requirement? Have you done who the psychologist? Have you checked the... Then you realize that actually we are far behind.
I see.
For instance, does Zambia know where they're going to stay in Morocco for the WAFCON?
Mm-hmm.
It's in 2 months now.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, if it was the Moroccans who would have come here, they would have tested the water, they would have tested the food, they had found where to buy reliable food, water, and transport arrangement, refrigerating, and what. Then they would recommend if there's certain food which they need to bring from Morocco, which is not found in Zambia for the duration of the tournament.
Yeah.
We don't do that. So when I see my son does that, I'm like, okay, he was doing one project which was interesting, using visual thing to train as opposed to be running long marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is changing.
Yeah.
So you allow these kids to do what they want to do. In our world, we are rigid. Our professionals was accountant, lawyer, you know, journalist, engineer, doctor.
Yeah.
They have all this crazy thing.
Mm.
You know, my other one was telling me he wants to be a YouTuber.
I was about to ask, do you not have one who's maybe wanting to be a content YouTuber. Creator?
What is that?
They want to now just be on the internet.
Nah, he wants to be a YouTuber. So you leave them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one is doing international relations. Well, more within the acceptable professions. The
professions, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They went to private schools. The first two, they had to go to Luengo. It's a school in Southern Province. There's something about that school. In fact, I came to know about Luengo from President Echech.
I see.
Many years back.
Yeah.
Because we are talking about schools. Before he was even president, we were talking about schools, and he then mentioned about where he took his son.
Ah, okay.
So there's a school, Luengo, and explained about this Luengo.
Mm.
Then later on, I met Mlenga Sata, who's the son of Michael Sata. Then he told me about Luengo. I remember very well. He said, DJ, you get the both sides of the world. You get the international Chengelo feel.
Yes. Yeah.
Then you get the traditional school of government school.
I see.
In one.
Yeah.
And when I saw that,
yeah,
I took them there. Yeah, they came out.
It's fantastic exposure. I'm speaking from experience. I was sent to what they call Model C schools in South Africa. So you do get the children from the township areas who are brought in. But then there's also these...
So you get what I'm saying.
Yes, exactly. Precisely. And it's a melting pot.
So you get what I'm saying. It's actually, you have a combination.
Exactly.
That actually, what changed me.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us who went to Munali, the Munali Secondary School of then, is what made me what I am.
Yeah.
Because I was coming out of Matero.
Mm.
Well, not a ghetto, but a relatively low suburb in terms of income earnings. Went to Munali, went in a class where I had to sit with a son of an MCC. That time, a son of MCC in UNIP was bigger than a cabinet minister. There's a Cressida, you know, with a driver picking them and dropping them with food. You have a son of an MD, then you have a son of a gardener coming out of Kaunda Square in the same class.
Yeah.
And we branded.
Yeah.
And you learned how to live with people, the haves that are not haves. You learned how to share.
Yeah.
And just learn to be one.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what also Luengo provides.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the first two, they came out very well.
Yeah.
The other two, we'll see.
It usually happens. There's always a gap because I see even with my siblings, the youngest gets away with everything. My mom shouted the one time. She says, I'm going to ground you. She looks at her and she says, what's grounding? What is that? What are you talking about?
So like my third son is at Simba. So I'm even asking, why am I giving him this special treatment? He should have gone through the same hardware.
No, but I think it's the privilege that comes with also just when things are calm in your life, when you've sorted, you have everybody has issues.
But even the time I was taking the brothers I could afford to take them to good schools, mm-hmm. but it was, remember I said, mm-hmm. what President Akinde mm-hmm. told me, and also what Mlenga Sata told me about what discipline mm-hmm. is instilled at that school. Up to now, the mm-hmm. number of judges, friends, they all take their kids to Luwengo.
Nice. Okay.
Nothing fancy about it.
But it's a good
beautiful school in Monze.
So when it comes to your social media, I want to tackle this now. Again, when you post something, sometimes it can be very polarizing. A lot of people have something to say about it most times. How does that come to become a discussion in the home when they're just like, oh my gosh, dad's going off again, dad's trending for something, or do you not even have a discussions with them about
it? We don't have the discussion. I don't think they even follow me.
Oh, they don't even follow you.
I'm more closer to the second mm-hmm. one, so we always,
I see, yeah.
We always say, no,
tag team on this,
daddy, do this.
Ah, okay.
No, that's not the right timing, do this. So,
so
he, I listen to him.
I see.
But they know.
Yeah, they know. Because you're very open about, especially when it comes to governance and policy issues.
Yeah.
You just say what comes to your mind.
I speak my mind. So, I speak my mind mm-hmm. because, I have nothing to fear. I think that's my contribution to the country, just mm-hmm. to speak what I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we may differ, but let's just speak.
Yeah. When it comes to, obviously, being an advocate for press freedom, when it comes to issues to do with the environment for the media now, what is your honest opinion?
Unfortunately, you are asking a person who's been in the deepest end.
Yes.
Of waste.
Hence the reason I'm asking.
So even what people sometimes sense the pressure now, I'll say, but better than what...
What you would...
Yeah, what we went through. Yeah, but now everything is more liberalized.
Yeah.
But I still think that we need to repeal a number of laws.
Mm-hmm.
In the penal code, there are a lot of... Like, for instance, I still don't agree that we should have criminal libel.
Yeah.
That if you have defamed me, I should take you to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are your thoughts.
Yeah.
What we need to have is that we strengthen penalties for civil libel. So that if you defame me, you pay me hard. You know, then you have to think twice to defame somebody because you may lose your house, you may lose your income, and so on. That's what I think than taking somebody to jail for having said something bad about you.
Yeah.
So that's the approach I take.
Yeah.
So we need to do a lot of media reforms in the sense of amending the laws.
Fair point. My final question, because it's something that I'm very passionate about as well, which is health and fitness. Are you still with the Judo Association?
Well, yes. I'm no longer in the executive.
Okay.
But I support them or the program. In fact, I was just talking to one of the owners of the Japanese restaurant, the only Japanese restaurant in Zambia, that they want to put up a judo tournament. You know, so I love that. What you see there at OYDC, the Judo Center.
Yes,
That's one of the things I would say is part of my regards with President
Kofi
Abanda.
Yeah.
We sourced that thing through the International Judo Federation when we met the President Marius, who's our friend, and that was part of the donation. So I support judo, but I support sports also in entirety. I've been president of New Monze Swallows for a very long time.
Yeah.
In Monze.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may wonder what I'm doing in Monze, but because my kids were at Luwengu, I used to go there quite often, and I end up now supporting the local football team there.
I see.
Without any attachment.
Yeah.
I've been in sports, I don't know. I'm president of Tekbo Federation.
Ah, okay.
I'll be giving up my presidency soon because I am also now founding president of the Esports Federation. Now, this is interesting because it's a new thing in the gaming world. Sports is going now on computers, on tablets. All the kids now, if you go home, you find them on the phone, they're playing games, FIFA, and so on.
Yeah.
So we have decided that Zambia should not be left out. And because of that, the exposure in that area and experience working with a lot of sports administrators from Olympic stage down, I've established this organization, which is now registered with the Sports Council, to regulate the gaming industry in Zambia in terms of sports. And hopefully we can take a team both to the World Cup and to the Olympics of gamers.
Okay.
So this team, I've put a group of young people, that's the executive.
Yeah.
I sit there as a tutelary president. Yeah. I allow them to run the meeting. I allow them to do everything. I allow them to make mistakes. I just tell them what to do.
To find you.
My aim is to create this to be a low model of an organization of how to run sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I will then hand over the federation to the young people to run it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, I sit on the same board with my son. he's on the board of Esports Federation.
Okay.
I'm just immediate past board member and chairman of League of National Olympics Committee of Zambia. Mm-hmm. Board member, OYDC Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
I am the country representative at the regional anti-doping organization in Botswana, representing Zambia, and I'm now in charge of League of 11 countries.
Nice.
Looking at sports doping.
Yeah.
I'm representing Africa on the UNESCO Martial Arts Board in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So I am into sports.
Yeah.
I do a lot of sports arbitration, and I'm probably, I'm a pioneer lawyer in sports law in Zambia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Branching out into something new. So.
And something that you're passionate
about. Yeah. So I was talking about this yesterday. I think it was my post on Facebook. That I intend to retire at 60.
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to do? Spend more time to do sports administration.
Okay.
Sports advisory, sports arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
As a pastime and have a passive income.
Mm-hmm.
Sit, keep my brain running.
Yeah.
And argue one or two cases to do with the sports.
Mm-hmm.
I plan my life in 10-year cycle.
I can tell.
Yeah. I plan myself. So I'm 50, 60, I need to be retired.
60, you retire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
DJ, it's been amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming through today. We've had a fantastic conversation. I've gotten to know so much more about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also gotten to know a little bit more about the background and our history. So I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, man. Thank you.
This conversation has been one that has been enlightening. And I've gotten an opportunity to get to know the man behind what so many people understand to be the political analyst, the polarizing figure, and the versatile dynamic feature that he is in our Zambian history. But I've had such a great conversation today, so thank you.